Well, Zach, the offseason is upon us, but that doesn't mean that we're done. You know, we got a lot of time between now and opening day, and we're going to fill it with the Selby's Godcast, courtesy of The Athletic Cleveland. I'm TJ Zuppi, he's Zach Meisel, and we are now firmly into our offseason bodies, right? Best shape of our lives.
I'm not. I can't speak for you.
Yeah, I can tell you for sure, I am definitely not. Since the offseason...
The silver lining to the early exit is, like, you get out of that schedule, right? Where you can actually, like, wake up early and go to bed at a reasonable time and not... I mean, you have two children, so maybe not. But, like, I was so excited to just, like, exhale and go to the gym. And first day, I injured my foot, and I've been in a walking boot ever since. So... I'm not in the best shape of my life.
Are you in a perpetual state of being pissed off? Have you grabbed Bauer's scooter, and is that how you're scooting about your house?
Well, I originally thought it was a stress fracture, so I was all ready to, like, tweet at him and pick his brain and ask what he thinks I should do to recover. It turns out it's not a stress fracture. It's more involving the ligament beneath the bone.
So, wow, that actually sounds worse.
Yeah, it's just, it's annoying more than anything. And I've got this boot is enormous and stupid and clunky. And it's just miserable. And I'm going stir crazy. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you have a boot on your foot, which prohibits you from leaving the house. I have two kids. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
The other day, I, for the first time, because usually when you see those apps for deliver me food or Uber Eats or Grubhub or any of those places, you think, what kind of fat ass would not be able to leave their house and would need the food delivered to them? Well, I'm that kind of fat ass, because I learned this week, as my wife's now been at work and I'm at home with the kids, that it makes it rather difficult to leave and go get lunch. So I actually did that the other day. For the first time, I had Uber Eats bring me some food. It was a really weird conversation with the person that brought me the food. Like, I didn't know what to do. Do I thank them? Do I give them a hug? Do I give them a handshake? I mean, what happens when that transaction takes place? Because I had already paid for it. I don't know. It was really weird, but the food is okay, and it came rather quickly. So I think I'm going to be using that, like, all the time during the off season. So I will definitely not be in the best shape of my life by the time spring training rolls around. I can guarantee that already.
This is what we have to talk about now. And it's only mid-October. What are we going to do?
Well, I've got tons of Netflix shows to tell you about that I've recently been watching. Started Designated Survivor.
Oh, yeah. Jack Bauer.
Yeah. Yeah. He's now the president. Hey, by the way, you're now the president. So just started that. It's October, so I'm watching some, like, horror flicks to get in the mood for Halloween. All this stuff that I wouldn't have time to do if the Indians were playing. And luckily, while all of this is happening, I haven't had a single person outside on our porch or in our window or anything looking from the outside in with a camera trying to take any photos of what's actually taking place in here.
That's a pretty good segue.
I know, I get paid for these such things. What do you think? What do you think of this report that the Astros are cheating? That's the word that's being used. It's being thrown around in the report. And as you read through it, whether it was Metro out of Boston having a report or Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports, it comes down to somebody from the Astros allegedly. And it doesn't really look like that much allegedly, because the guy was kicked out, was, I guess, taking photos and videos and texting from just outside the dugout, whether it was at Progressive Field and now at Fenway Park for game one of the ALCS. Is this what Mike Clevenger was talking about when he said that they were up against it because of the analytical side of things?
So I want to take you through, like, my timeline on this. I actually received, you know, the photo that everyone's been talking about where the guy's standing in the camera bay. I actually received that from someone yesterday. We're recording this on... Well, I don't. What day is it? Wednesday.
Wednesday. Yeah.
So I received that yesterday and was so I purposefully, like, didn't want to sink my teeth into this immediately because I wanted to see I wanted to learn more just naturally about, like, if this is true, how long has it been going on, and what depths are there? Like first, it's easier to do that if you cover the Astros or the Red Sox because they're still playing and there aren't ulterior motives. Like, if you're going to report on this and you cover the Indians and you want to get player reaction and stuff, well, the Indians lost. And it like you mentioned when we were talking about this, like, it doesn't come off right or as well if you're an Indians player and you're, you know, you do an interview now and it's like, you just sound like you have an axe to grind. So I kind of wanted to let this unfold a little bit before I really dug into it. But then I received this picture. Okay. And I start, you know, I'm told like this is the guy who was spying or whatever he was doing for the Astros. And I start like, I take a screenshot and then I take more screenshots of that screenshot and I'm zooming in and trying to like find out anything I can. Like maybe I can get like a little guy, I can see the credential and I can find the name and then I can Google the name and research and try to creep on this guy's social media platforms. And, you know, maybe there's someone else in the photo and I can get like a little piece of something they're wearing and figure out who they are. And maybe they're related to this. And I'm like,
you know what, Zach, I am so happy that you finally, all of your social media creeping has finally paid off. And now you can actually use it for good.
But I'm doing all this. And then I stopped and I'm like, what am I going to figure out here? What am I going to solve? Like, I have this photo, but like, we don't know. And even with the goofy guy standing, holding, I love that the thing he was holding that shields his phone said sure on it. like, am I cheating? The answer might be closer than you think. But like, we now have the guy's name and we know his slight connection to the Astros and we have an idea of what teams thought he was doing. And it's like, even with all that information, we still don't know the details that are most pertinent to the story. What exactly was he doing? How exactly was it helping Houston? How long has this been going on? And so I without any of those facts, like, I don't know. I don't think I'm going as crazy about this story as a lot of other people are.
Well, I think the one thing we can agree on, and maybe everybody can agree on this, is looks like some shady shit was happening. I don't know to what degree it ultimately matters, but something shady is clearly happening here with the way that it played out and it happening in multiple cities. And, you know, according to the reports, the Indians tipped the Red Sox off on this just to keep an eye out to see if it would happen. And what, you know, it happens right there in game one. It's also interesting that they sweep through the Indians. They beat the Red Sox in game one. This gets brought to light. The Red Sox take care of it, and the Astros haven't won a game since. That's kind of curious. But to push all the jokes aside and to kind of treat this a little seriously, not as just some one big conspiracy theory, the problem I have with it is kind of similar to you. I'm not going to say that it doesn't make some sort of difference somehow, because the Astros, whether it was somebody purposefully doing it or a staffer that requested this to happen or whether it goes all the way to the top, you know, we don't know about that. But obviously there's a reason for this person to be down there. There's something to be gained for that. I just don't know to what level it is. And I don't think, and I think, you know, 10 minutes after the game ends and they're swept out of the postseason, it's easy to point to that and say, well, this is just something else that really pisses us off. I get that from any Indians player's perspective that would even hint at that. I understand where that frustration would come from. I also don't believe that the Indians lost or got swept in the series because someone was in the dugout or outside the dugout taking photos, allegedly. I saw the offense fail to get after Verlander and Cole, and they put up 6 runs in the series, and they couldn't even hit my son's weight, basically, in the first 3 games of that series. Is it because the guy was outside taking photos that happened? I don't really think so. So I think that there's clearly something here. I just don't know what degree. And I think to make grandiose statements and draw some sort of definitive conclusion based just on the little bit of knowledge that we know so far would be irresponsible. What I think it does point to, or at least shed some light on, is, you know, some of the the talk that was out there that the Indians needed to do more from an analytical side of things, or that the Indians players are frustrated internally that they weren't doing enough. I think we can kind of put some of that to bed. It seems like this sort of lines up to tie to what they were discussing right after game three happened. So I think that's at least encouraging to get some closure there. And the other thing is, I'm just curious, and this is probably something we won't know now or maybe never know. I'm just curious what can be gained from that, because we've seen other teams, whether it's sign stealing or, you know, the Red Sox were allegedly playing on their Apple watches in regular season games last year. And I just don't know what you do with that becomes pertinent, you know, how that actually helps you win a series. I think there's something to it, but I just need to know a little bit more before I can just, you know, take this giant chunk out of it and truly analyze it.
Yeah, and so the issue I have too is Major League Baseball issued a statement today saying they consider the matter closed. It's over with. They say no one was violating any rules and that this guy was spying on the other teams to make sure they weren't spying on them. And it's like, I don't know. If Clevinger and Kipnis, and I'm sure others wanted to, if they're aware of this stuff happening and they're peeved by it, then there's got to be fire where there's smoke. And again, I'm not going to go start a witch hunt and say that the Astros need to like vacate wins or something because they might have been cheating. We don't know the extent, and we might never know the extent.
But if they got some illegal tattoos, you'd be all over that.
I'm not going to touch that. Anyway, the whole thing just, like you said, it seems shady. It reeks of something not being right. And I don't know. And if you're Major League Baseball, like if you have people making sure the other team isn't cheating, quote unquote, like, doesn't that speak to, like, there's a bigger issue here? Like, you might need to step in and just try to fix things, because this isn't normal.
Yeah, I saw, somebody on Twitter, a national guy, I can't remember who might actually put this out there. Scott Miller, maybe? I can't remember who it was, but someone said, you know, the technology exists to put a headset between the catcher and the pitcher. And so, you know, no one's stealing their signs as long as they're communicating all the time. I don't know if it goes that deep. I don't know if that's the solution. But you're right. I mean, there's something here happening where teams are very paranoid about sign stealing and hitters picking up on pitchers' tendencies. And these things have been happening since the game has existed. The difference is nowadays they have the technology to super zoom in on things, or, you know, use electronics to at your disposal, which is kind of where I draw the line. I have no problem, you know, with some of the subtle things that hitters or pitchers or anybody picks up to try to gain an advantage. I think that's part of the gamesmanship of the sport. Well, when you start bringing technology in, or you're snapping photos, or you're really going above and beyond, that's where I think you have to draw the line. And I don't, you know, I think in this case, it seems like something happened that would be crossing some sort of line. Again, I don't know to what level, and I'm not saying that the Indians lost in the first round because of this happening. I completely disagree with that. Their stars didn't show up in those games, and that's, to me, is still what's most important. But, I mean, you can't look at this and just kind of sweep it under the rug like it seems like they're doing. I think there's something bigger here, and maybe it's just because the sport overall doesn't want to have the Astros advance to the World Series and have this taint and put a kind of a smudge on the game while it's happening. And this is something they address in the winter. I don't know what the case may be, but it does seem like there's something to this that I'm at least curious enough to scratch that itch.
Yeah. And it's like, if you weren't doing anything wrong, then why didn't you have a credential, and why were you kicked out? And why did teams feel the need to alert other teams? Like, you think the Indians care to help out the Red Sox? And like, no, but they reached out to say, hey, you might want to look into this. Like, that never happened. Like, that wouldn't happen. So it's I don't know. And I also feel like we need to say this. We are not saying this is the reason the Indians lost. Like, this is, the Indians got boat raced by a team that played so much better in those three games than the Indians did. But I guess what I'm most interested in, what I'd love to know one day is, like, this guy didn't just show up a couple times and this was it. Like, this, they had a plan here. They had, this guy had to know where to go and what exactly to do and what he was looking for. And they had to know how to take what he was telling them and use that to their advantage. Like, this goes deeper. And I wonder how long something like that's been going on. And not only that, I mean, I wonder how many other teams do something like this.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's the same thing that got brought up with the pine tar and sticky substances when Bauer brought it up. And it's why, you know, it initially became about Bauer and the Astros and that feud. But his overall point was, this is really tough to police. So instead of just picking and choosing our spots, let's find something that we can all agree on. And pitchers can now use this and kind of level the playing field. The thing that that you have to be careful when you start accusing one team of doing something, in this case, like pine tar, there might be guys on your side that are doing it.
Yeah.
And you don't know who you're alienating within your own clubhouse. And I think it's a really dangerous line that a lot of managers seemingly don't want to walk, because, you know, there's even instances, you know, people are tweeting out video of the reliever for the Red Sox who's doing something with his wrist and his forearm between every single pitch. And it's like, wonder what he's doing there. But you're not going to see a manager come out and ask someone to go check on that, because probably the next inning, the opposing manager can come out and do the same thing to your guy. So it does become this huge can of worms where, man, you pull back the lid, you think you're going to get, you know, here's a couple of worms here at the top, but you don't really know how deep that dirt actually goes. And sometimes it could actually point back to you. And so it's like, it's the same thing with this Astros story. You know, you have this guy allegedly taking photos or snapping pictures and sending out texts, and who knows where those texts are going. Like you said, you don't know who else is doing similar things with other information. You know, it wasn't too long ago that the Indians were accused by the Red Sox in 2016 of stealing signs, and Justin Verlander loves to go to that card anytime the Indians have beat him in the past. So, you know, it's not like the Indians have never, you know, are like the Angels that have never been accused of doing anything either. So, I don't know.
This pales in comparison to Albert Bell corking his bat and Jason Grimsley crawling through the duck space up above in the ceiling. And
yeah, I mean, that was badass, right? Yeah. Like that was really badass. Baseball nerd that's integrated everything, including all the way to cheating.
Yeah.
You got a guy with a cell phone,
right,
snapping photos.
Yeah. So this doesn't interest me like the Albert Bell story did. At least not
fair yet. Enough. I have found it very difficult to get interested. I think really since CS and NLCS began, and it's not because I don't level of rooting interest. Usually I just want to see good games, but ultimately I find myself rooting for the Brewers a little bit. It's tough to really root for anybody in the American League, but you know, you still find something to get interested in. And I think there are some interesting storylines. But as I'm watching these national networks, especially on FS1 on Fox, these broadcasts, I don't know what it is. And maybe with Joe Buck, it's just the occasional, I don't know if it's talking down to the audience, but almost like a tongue-in-cheek, not being serious with a lot that happens on those broadcasts. I've just not been very enthusiastic about the way the postseason has been covered. It just feels like to me, Zach, a lot of these broadcasters or analysts get brought in, and it sounds like they're guys that are getting paid to announce the game, but they're not really enjoying it. And if I want, as someone with Major League Baseball, I would want my product to be called by someone that is really enthusiastic about the sport. That's why I loved during the NL wildcard game, they did the alternative broadcast with Jason Benetti, the White Sox broadcaster, play-by-play guy, Mike Petriello, and Eduardo Perez. And that broadcast was awesome because there was – not only was there a lot of analysis brought in through numbers and just more meaningful thoughts and conversation than just the typical cliche you hear on the broadcast, but those – every single one of the guys in the booth just had a love for baseball that was reflected through the broadcast. And as a viewer, you couldn't help but be kind of brought along for that ride too. I think it's a real problem when you have other broadcasters that almost just talk down about the current state of the game constantly. And it's not that you can't have disagreements with the way things are done, but the constant basically beating the viewer over the head with the game used to be better and the game isn't as good as it used to be. And yeah, now we're all about launch angles and strikeouts and home runs. And I would find it a lot more refreshing if we could find somebody to call this game, these games, the biggest games for your sport, what is supposed to be with the most eyes on your sport and hopefully bring in and create some new fans. Would love to have people that actually, you know, sound like they like the game, actually calling it and bringing me the action. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I have a few thoughts on this. First of all, it is so freaking hard to find the games on TV. Like, I know I sound like a crotchety old man right now, but in today's day and age, we have DirecTV. So I think the ALCS and games on FS1, it's like channel, I don't know, like 219 or something, and TBS is like 24. Like, can the game just be on Fox? Can it just be on like national TV where it's easy to find and then you get a lot better ratings? Like, why is, I don't understand this. Like, I have football just placed in front of my face every day of the week on one of the basic channels, and I can't find the ALCS and NLCS games. It drives me crazy. Okay, that's off my chest. Now, it's so funny to me that we're at a point where a lot of people are criticizing the people who have this platform in front of a national audience or an audience of people who can find whatever channel the game's on. And they're criticizing the game, as they call it. And then we criticize them, and then they criticize us for criticizing them, for criticizing the game. And like, it's an endless cycle. And it's, I'm not saying like what our criticism here isn't warranted. What the people who are criticizing the game while calling the action, what are you going to accomplish? Like, I don't think because you calling a LCS game and saying that launch angle is stupid and the way the game is played now just isn't as good as it used to be, like, that's not going to foster change, and it's not going to go back to the way it was. And I look around to all the sports, and you know what? The NFL product, football, is so different than it was 10 years ago, let alone 20, 30 years ago when a lot of the analysts played. And I would think that they'd think it's for the worst too, because no one plays defense. No one knows how you can legally tackle. No one knows what a catch is. In the NBA, like, teams score, they shoot tons of three pointers and they score 120 points with ease. And it's like, that's very different from 30 years ago when if you scored 95 points, that was a lot in a game. And it's like, games, the sports evolve and they change over time. And a lot of times they change to a product that is more appealing to the major audience. And so this is supposed to be more appealing, more home runs. People love home runs, more strikeouts. People love watching guys throw 99 miles an hour with ease. Like, stop criticizing the game and just enjoy it or get off the air. I mean, it's so tired. You're not going to change anything. And it's not like and I'm not thinking of anyone specific here, but like, for an analyst who is calling a game now, maybe he played in the 80s and 90s, and it's like, yeah, the game's so different, whatever. And guess what? When you played in the 80s and 90s, there was probably someone who played in the 50s and 60s and was saying, this is ridiculous. Back in my day, every game was 1-0, and the starting pitcher went 9 innings and then went and ate hot dogs. And it's like, things change, and it's okay, and you need to be accepting of that and promote the sport, or else, seriously, just go find something else to do.
Yeah, I just feel like there are so many people that would love to be in that analyst position or a play-by-play position where they're pushing out a better feeling, a better vibe on the sport. I don't understand and it's not to say you can't disagree or point out your point of view on why things take place, but to make it be a constant thing, like a steady vibe throughout the broadcast. You know why strikeouts are up? because people come out of the bullpen throwing freaking 101 miles per hour. Let's talk about some of the young stars that crush those home runs that you're just hating so much. You know, the game is different, yes, and guys are loading up to swing and miss. The reason for that is because it's so freaking hard to string three hits together in an inning, because you have guys coming out of the bullpen that can blow you away. The starters, you know, the roles have changed. Things that are constantly evolving. Let's show the audience why that's happening. Not spend the whole time talking about why it's stupid or why it's different. Because there's a lot of players that have a really good tale to tell on a lot of different things, but they just spend their time ripping into the state of the game and basically just sounding like they'd rather be anywhere else on the planet than doing that broadcast, where, you know, there's still a human element of this. You don't have to sit there and talk about the analytical side constantly. You can talk about what a player is feeling in a certain situation because you've been there before and you know what he's going, what's he's going through. And instead of focusing on how the game has changed, think about as a player when you were playing, how the game was changing and how you adapted, and reflect that, show that to your audience. That's the stuff I'd love to hear. There's just, the broadcasts have gotten awfully stale and awfully boring, just kind of being what they have been. But I don't think that's a reflection necessarily of the sport. I think it's just a reflection of the broadcast getting stale and the consumers wanting something new. And I think some of the, like that StatCast broadcast that they did, I think that shows that there's an audience that's out there that would really love and are craving that sort of different analysis, smart analysis. And it's not, and this is where a lot of people get tripped up. It's not just about the numbers. It's not just about bringing in WOBA or WRC plus, or explaining what somebody's, you know, expected batting average is. It goes beyond that. You can use those tools and make it a smarter broadcast, but it's not just about the numbers. It's just about having better conversations. And this is when the sport is up on it to this pedestal and should be shown off. Like, it's an amazing thing. Like, I think you and I think the game is, but too many times it's just beating you over the head with this narrative. And because so many people just listen to that and soak it in, what do you think your consumers start to think when you sound like you hate the sport? Of course, they're going to hate the sport too. Instead of sounding like you're really enjoying what you're doing and you have such passion for the sport, I think that would bring some of the passion back to the game.
No, and that's what I meant by, like, I hate that we are now sitting here criticizing this, because that isn't healthy for the sport either. And, like, I wish we didn't have to talk about this.
Right. Let's talk about guys that throw 101. The Indians need more of those guys. Can we agree? I really think the Indians need to bring in some more guys that hit home runs. Can we settle on that?
I do want to say, like, we will get to the Indians off season, and you know, we had the exit interviews with Terry Francona and Mike Chernoff and Chris Antonetti a week ago now. And we will, there's some stuff in there that we can certainly dissect as we move forward. But I think, I don't know, we heard from a lot of people after we put out the podcast the day the Indians got knocked out. And I think a lot of people, the general consensus was like, that was therapeutic. I needed to listen to that, but I also need some time. And it's going to take some time. Yeah. To, you know, this was rough. This was not like one of those postseason exits where you can say, all right, well, we'll try again next year. Like, this was a kick to the groin and probably will sting for many fans for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it leaves you wondering where you go next. And I don't know what the answer is right now. There's a lot of there are still going to be a lot of turnover for a team that has a lot of its core already locked up. You know, there's some huge decisions looming and probably not a ton of flexibility to do it with. You know, there's some really tough conversations to be had with Michael Brantley and maybe Danny Salazar. You know, they were talking about him, where he's going to fit next year. Well, first of all, is he going to be healthy? And two, can you believe that he's going to be healthy enough to offer him a contract? Or is he a non-tender guy? Is he somebody that maybe you non-tender and try to sign to a more of an incentive-laden deal? I think that was something we'll discuss here in the coming weeks. But you're right. You know, we'll get there. Just needed to let it breathe a little bit. Before we go any further, though, I do want to say thank you to everybody that has logged on to Apple Podcasts and has recently left us comments about, you know, listening to the podcast throughout the year. We really appreciate it. Trust me, we go back and read them all. I send Zach screenshots of them every day to show that people actually care and listen to this podcast. So if you've left us a 5-star review over there, or you've gone in and left some kind words, we really, really appreciate it.
And I know a few people in their reviews have mentioned that they are now owed a beer, and I will live up to that at some point. I have not forgotten you.
Although they are spread out across the country. Like, there was one from New York, one from somewhere else. So I don't know how you're going. Are you going to ship them a beer?
The Indians have a nice week-long stay next year in New York. They go,
they
go Yankees off day, Mets. And the off day is my birthday, my 30th birthday.
So, is it? Wow, that whole week. They're going to have a whole week off.
Oh. If there's a New York fan out there who I owe a beer, there's ample time.
Is that when they have the weird Monday off day or a Friday off
that's
day?
Not, what the hell that's is the that's a Monday off day. I think my birthday is the Monday or maybe the Sunday, but they have there's like a they've got a Wednesday off, a couple Fridays off, like
they have a Friday. Yeah, like what is that?
So bizarre. they don't, you know, instead
I don't get it.
The West Coast pretty much immediately with the Seattle Anaheim trip to start the year, went back out there for Oakland later on. But next year, it's 3 separate trips to the West Coast. You go to Seattle at the end of a trip, you go to Anaheim, and it's like next year's schedule is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Somebody had a few too many of the beers you were offering before they put that together. It was weird. So I enjoyed your top 25 random Indians jerseys from the year.
That is always a lot of fun to put together. And I always go into it thinking, oh God, are there going to be enough to make 25 good ones? And then, so what I do is, you know, I use the hashtag throughout the season. And so I go back and look and like the names on the honorable mention list, like the ones I had to cut out, first of all, there are like 50. But the fact that like Chad Durbin and Jeff Manship and Kelly Shopik and and Boone Logan rough. And Jason Bure and Josh Barfield and Mark DeRosa, like these are guys who didn't make the cut. It's incredible. People, Indians fans, amaze me just day in and day out during the season. Some of those jerseys I see, it's crazy.
I would have to say my favorite would be former All-Star Brian LaHare, who was a favorite of Paul Hoynes. Loved him in spring training. I think he wanted to write like 3 features on the guy. Every day I saw him over there in the corner talking to him. Like, what could he be talking to Brian LaHare about again? But, you know, people forget. People forget,
that is,
Zach, that Brian LaHare was an All-Star.
Maybe the most fascinating career arc of anyone, like, outside of, like, Moonlight Graham. That's a movie reference. You probably won't get it. But he was an All-Star with the Cubs in 2012, and he was like had just burst onto the major league scene. Had a terrible second half. So he was an All-Star, and then the next year he went and played in Japan. Like, what? That was quick. And then he joined the Indians the year after that for spring training, didn't make the team. And then I think he played overseas and like internationally or in independent leagues after that. To go from an All-Star, I mean, he had like an incredible half of a season and otherwise just couldn't cut it in the big leagues.
That's what makes it fun about All-Stars being named midway through the year, is that you get a number of guys that just had a really good month, and that kind of leads them into the All-Star game. And then you look at the overall numbers at the end of the year and you're like, huh? I mean, even Michael Brantley in 2017, you look at it and you say, well, he only played in, 90 games? But he's an All-Star, and that goes down on his resume as an All-Star because he was a good hitter in those first 90 games.
So number one was Mike Rouse, who I know is another one of your personal favorites. And that one stood out just because in 2007, the Indians had such a deep roster, a lot of like really good players, and they didn't have many holes. I mean, the starting rotation was strong. The lineup was 1 through 9. It was like, didn't like everybody have Yeah, 20 home runs. And the bullpen was great. And then you just – and then all that – and then you had Mike Rouse, who just was horrendous at the plate. He only – he lasted till August, and then they sent him down and called up Asdrubal Cabrera for the first time. But he was just like a fish out of water. He did not fit on that roster at all. And the fact that someone would have his jersey is just – I'll never understand that.
He was really good in the clubhouse. Really good. Just kind of bridged all sorts of gaps all throughout the clubhouse. So that's why, of course.
And another one I want to mention, Mark Grudzielanek. He was with the Indians briefly, 30 games in 2010.
Hey, you know what Grudzielanek is spelled backwards? I'm not even going to try and say it.
But that was also – that was on opening weekend in Seattle. And someone was sitting in the front row behind the Indians' dugout with a Grudzielanek jersey. It's like, man, starting the year off strong. And then I'll always be mystified by Colin Cowgill, because the 2016 Indians, who came within a whisker of winning a World Series, their opening day outfield was Cowgill, Rajay Davis, and Marlon Byrd. And it's just incomprehensible.
Oh, you think you can predict baseball? I present to you the opening day 2016 outfield. Yeah, I mean, it was really weird, though, going back, not to completely leave this in the dust, because it will continue to be awesome all throughout the offseason. And where can people read about the top 25 random jerseys?
On The Athletic, duh.
Of course they can, yeah. But just going through this year, there were so many different things. I'm compiling, and by the time people listen to this, they'll probably actually be able to read it finally. It took me a long time to sift through every single quote from this year. But just going through and putting together a tale of this season with quotes, with trying to put as little of my voice into it as possible, and just kind of letting the players, the coaching staff, the front office tell the tale. I don't think there's ever been a less memorable season where more shit happened. If that even makes sense. There was a lot of shit happening, but none of it was really memorable, and nothing will ever really leave a lasting memory of this ever taking place. But as I went through the year, I'm just kind of assuming I'll be able to kind of breeze through this, because there weren't a lot of meaningful games, and they really only played a handful of games that ever really felt like it meant anything. The division stunk. But by the time you went through it, I mean, between Cold starts with the bats and Brantley coming back and Kipnis struggling and Bauer coming on the scene, Clevinger 200 innings, Andrew Miller can't even get on the field, Cody Allen. I mean, I just kept going and going and going. I'm up to like 400 words before I even get to the All-Star break.
I mean, what will be the lasting memories of this season? Obviously, the playoff result. But when I think about like the regular season itself, and we touched on this briefly last podcast, but like, I think we can dig into this a little bit more now. Like, just, it was such a forgettable year. It was such an unremarkable year. The things that stand out to me are the Puerto Rico trip, the OPOT fiasco, and
the
bullpen, certainly. But that's like it.
Yeah.
And like Jose Ramirez having this MVP bid for 4 months and then turning into Mike Rouse.
That one is still tough to completely wrap my brain around, because for the first 5 months of the season, the guy was Super Saiyan. I mean, he could not be stopped. And the final six-ish weeks of the season, he looked worse than the guy that we saw trying to man shortstop before Francisco Lindor arrived. Which I can't figure it out. And you look at it, and he just sucked. Again, you took one of baseball's best fastball hitters, and he just sucked against fastballs in the final 6 weeks. I don't get it. You know, I don't know if he was nursing something at the end of the year that he didn't.
He had a sore wrist.
Yeah, but that was they never brought that to light, and no one ever stood behind it as an excuse. And after the year is over, when you can kind of unbuckle your belt a little bit and explain a little bit of what happened, at no point, despite many times to offer an excuse for him. Was that ever brought up? So I can't really use that as an excuse if they're not going to use that as an excuse.
I agree 100%. If they don't cite that, then why should we?
Yeah, clearly he was healthy enough to play, and he was healthy enough to play Mario Kart with it, and he was still kicking ass with it. So I don't know, man. I will remember Mario Kart and ping pong matches that often looked more intense than the games actually taking place on the field. There were times where Indians pitchers looked more lathered up after their ping pong match than they did after the game.
Yeah, but that, I mean, how hard is baseball? Like, if Bartolo Colon plays it, I don't think you're going to, like, I don't know. It's not like you pitch an inning and then you go back to the dugout and put your hands on your knees and you're panting and you need a Gatorade. And
fair. I guess my overall point was that they never were chased. They didn't have to really work up much of a lather when they win the division by, what, 15 games? As Tito reminded us many times in the post-game, post-mortem.
Yeah. It was a stupid season. I don't know.
It really was.
Yeah.
Never as a season that meant so much ever reflected so little. I mean, I think I'll just remember this season as never really feeling like it got started. Everything always felt like it was just waiting for the next thing to happen. It never was living in the moment. And I don't think that's a reason. Oh, they won the division by 15 games. They weren't chased. That's why they lost to the Astros. No, they lost to the Astros because the Astros are really friggin' good. And Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole shoved it up their butts, and they couldn't hit when it mattered the most. That's why they lost. Not because the Twins or the White Sox, the Royals or the Tigers weren't good. But it still was – it made for something where you're, like, just waiting for the next thing to happen. You never got to just live in the moment with this season.
So it's we can go so many ways with this too, because, you know, the year before, they entered the playoffs as the hottest team in baseball, and everyone's darling to make it to the World Series. And then when they lost to the Yankees, everyone said, oh, they peaked too soon and you don't want to get too hot in September. And it's like, but what they did is exactly what they were missing all year. Is during that winning streak, they were living in the moment. They were focusing on that day's game. And for a team that has stressed, today is all that matters and we'll deal with tomorrow tomorrow. And whatever happened yesterday, it's in the past. We're not thinking about it. That 22 game winning streak allows you to do that. And that's what got them through that all. And this year they were never doing that. Like, yeah, they were still trying to win games when they went out there. But like you said, you know, they were waiting on someone to get healthy. They were waiting on someone to get out of a slump. They were waiting on some trade to be made, you know, and it's eventually that catches up to you. They never had a period of time when they just looked like themselves, where they looked like a team that was whole. And you can't just gather everybody who you can't just like pick all the talented kids in the playground and then go and challenge like a really good team to a game. Like, you need to practice first. And they never had the full complement of players for a sustained stretch where like everyone was used how they should be used.
And that's a fair take. My rebuttal would be, what could they
No, I'm not, I'm not saying they,
I don't think that there's
no,
anything
no,
they
I'm
could
not
have.
Saying they could have either. And I'm also not saying that even if they had that, they would have been better than any other teams. Like, what they had was what they had. The Astros were better, cheating or not. And the results speak for themselves. But just in the whole scope of the full season from February to the beginning of October, like, this just never was a team that, like, it wasn't, nothing was smooth. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no. I feel like I'm trying to think of something that's like some intangible here, but like, it just, something was off about them from the get go and never resolved itself.
Yeah. I mean, it was constantly like something was missing. Something always felt missing, and they never quite could grab onto it. And, you know, the Indians front office evaluated this group, put together a top-heavy roster that when the top-heavy portion of it is on their game and doing what they're supposed to do can hang in and beat anybody. And I still believe that to this day.
They had seven All-Stars, if you include Brad Hand.
But if Kluber stinks and Miller's not healthy and Allen is not, whatever is happening with him, or he threw too much in August or whatever the heck happened, and your offense is Francisco Lindor and nothing else, I mean, you can't overcome those things. You can overcome maybe one, maybe two of those. You can't overcome when all of that's true. And, you know, they kind of built themselves to be star heavy. And when it came down to it, those stars didn't shine. So if that's how you're built, if you're built to be a top heavy roster that wins with star power and your stars play like average or below average players, guess what happens? Exactly what we saw.
And so now they have to fix that. And it's going to be really, really difficult. And we're not going to dive into that now, but it's just.
Oh, you don't want to do that at the 45-minute mark of the podcast?
You know, it's funny because last year, you know, last offseason, they barely made any changes. And we critiqued that over and over and over again through the season. And we can still do that today. But I remember, like, every podcast, it was like, oh, there's no activity on the free agent front. Like, this offseason is so boring. Well, it's only mid-October. Like, that stuff doesn't even start for another month or so.
I know. I started looking at, you know, as soon as the offseason begins, you and I start forecasting, okay, what can we write about this? What can we write about that? We start mapping this out. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go through some of their non-roster guys and kind of make the case why they might make sense, why they don't make sense. Let me see when the non-roster deadline is. And so I open up the page and I go, November 30. What? Like, come on. We got to wait till the end of November to be able to discuss that and write about that. Oh my God. What are we going to do between now and then? So yeah, I think your point is well taken.
Yeah. And I guess the good thing for our purposes is that the Indians will have to be busier this winter because they're going to have a lot of departing players. They're going to have a lot of holes to fill. They're going to have,
yeah,
Just a weird setup payroll-wise where a lot of guys' contracts starting to get a little more expensive, and especially at the top with Encarnacion and Kipnis. Yeah. Like, that's $35 million right there. That's heavy.
And somebody tell Kluber to stop winning awards so his contract escalates.
Well,
how selfish
can
you be?
When they negotiated the contract, they should have just put playoff performance as the incentive clauses.
Wow. Wow. Well, because we know, based on the narrative, he just can't do it. He's a total head case in the postseason when he gets there. That must be it. It can't be anything else other than just mentally, it's just a large block, and we'll just forget about the first six games he ever threw in the postseason. How about that?
Yeah. So, I we'll have plenty to talk about, but I also get the sense that, like, and I don't know that the front office or the organization as a whole grasps this, but, like, yes, the window is open for another couple years, and part of that is the fact that the Central is so weak. It'll be easy to punch your ticket, but that's not, and that can't be, and that never was, but, like, that can't be enough. Like, you can't, yeah. you have to go out and be aggressive in the offseason and give yourself a roster, and it's gonna be really difficult to do because they don't have a ton of flexibility. But they have to build a much better roster that can not only survive the 6 months, but, like, geez, you got to go into October having your fan base feeling good about you. Because why should they right now?
Yeah, well, it's also going to be tough because as much as we talked about this throughout this season, it's going to be even more true next year. No matter what they do in the regular season, none of it matters. None of it matters. They could pull off what the Red Sox did this year. They could win 110 games. They could go in rolling, and everyone will say, yeah, but what's Kluber going to be in the postseason? What's the bullpen going to look like in the postseason? What's this? What's that? And it only is going to matter what they do in the playoffs. And you know what? When you build yourself up like they did in 2016, you can look back on that fondly, and people can remember that ride as being fun. But when you're consistently good and you're doing this every year and you've raised the bar of your expectations – that's fair. That is fair. There's nothing unfair about that level of expectation from fans. And I will never say that they're wrong to take that level of expectation now because I think that's the right level to.
And to make matters even tougher, they now know the Astros weren't stealing their signs. They were just making sure the Indians weren't stealing theirs. So
that must be it. Can't wait to see what Trevor Bauer says on MLB Network about this. Did you see he will now be a guest analyst throughout the rest of the ALCS and NLCS?
Appointment television.
Oh, boy. Can we tell listeners now? I mean, we considered the whole year about having him do a live chat with our subscribers. How long did that thing go on? Like, we decided, trying to decide when was the right time to ask him if he wanted to come on and chat with our subscribers.
Well, right when we were ready to, he breaks his leg and is in the worst mood. And, like, if you make eye contact with him in the second half of August or the first 2 weeks of September, like, he would burn a hole through you. So.
Yeah, now he's taking his talents to MLB
Network.
We'll get
him, though. We'll get him either maybe in the spring or something, because he's great about that. And he's such a complex character, but, like, when you really boil it down, like, he loves connecting with fans. And he loves trolling and getting in arguments. But, like, he really does like the conversation with people.
With some people. Maybe not all people. But at least.
But I think as long as fans are respectful, I think he enjoys it.
Yeah. I think he enjoys taking it up to the line and maybe occasionally taking a little bit over the line, maybe a lot over the line, but yeah, that's his personality and that's who he is. And as you and I have talked about many times in this podcast, as reporters and people that are eagerly seeking quotes and interesting stories, we really, really appreciate that. And if you see him somewhere in an airport, see if you can pick up his bags for him, because that bag might be pretty heavy. It's got weighted balls in it.
Yeah, because last year he threw in Iceland 4 times when he was there for a week-long vacation. I think this year he said Costa Rica. He might be going to Costa Rica, and he's going to pack those. And, you know, anytime you could be lounging on the beach and soaking up the sun, or you could be standing in the sand and working on your changeup.
So if you happen to be in any of the areas that he travels, make sure you bring a catcher's glove, a mask, and a protective gear. He might ask you to catch his side session. You never know what could happen. Any parting words for our listeners this week?
No, I know we've been a little light over the last week on The Athletic. We'll be ramping it up a little bit here now that you've had your time to grieve or punch a wall or whatever you do to cope with the aftermath of the Indians' early exit.
Nick Hagedon would say that that's not recommended. Do not punch a locker, a wall, or
anything
like that. Yeah,
so we've got some cool stuff coming up. And not only that, but also some nuts and bolts, because I know people are already curious and what to expect as the Indians turn the page here. But other than that, no, I mean, I'm stuck in this stupid boot, so I don't have anything new to add.
Oh, so that steady clunking you heard throughout the podcast was on his side as Zach walks around his house. And then the children screaming in the background. Of course, I can take full ownership of that. But we will continue to churn out these as much as we frequently do. We usually go about once a week, but we might go a little shorter every once in a while.
People want more.
And so we'll see what happens. And so you can count on that. We'll also be doing live chats pretty much every single week with you guys throughout the off season. So that won't be going away anytime soon. And as Zach said, we've got plenty of stuff coming on the website now that we've given it a couple weeks to let it breathe and marinate, and everyone can talk about playoff hopes for other teams in this city. And now that they can come back and talk baseball again, we'll be here for you. So be sure to subscribe over on The Athletic. We've got plenty of deals going on constantly, like 40% off deals all the time. As I say, pretty much every single week. If you can't find a deal, hit up Zach or I on Twitter or send us an email, and we will point you in the right direction and help you get hooked up to be a subscriber. And we appreciate that. We appreciate everybody that subscribes to the podcast and leaves us kind notes over on Apple Podcasts. You can do it on Google Podcasts, Stitcher. Where am I leaving? Spotify, Podbean. Your favorite, Podbean, and many other places. You can find them on Anchor as well. Basically, we're now so expansive that if you have a podcast app and you search Selby is Godcast, you will find us. Till next week, Zach, adios, and we hope everybody has a good week. We're out of here. See you.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.